So we got the opportunity this week to begin Sefer Shemos. And there's a lot to talk about in this week's parsha, a lot to focus on. But just quickly, as an overview, as we begin Sefer Shemos, the question that we should be asking really is, what's the theme of this Sefer, right? Bereishis has, every Sefer has a theme. Every Sefer has its own unique identity and perspective that it offers us. So one suggestion that as we begin Shemos, you know, we look at, obviously, Bereishis as the Avos. It's more individuals. And Shemos is more of the building of the nation. We begin with exile, which is unique. Most nations don't begin with exile, as of Hirsch writes. Right? We start the opposite way. We begin with nothingness, and we grow. But we form the nation. The Ramban says it's the Sefer HaGeula. It starts with us going, obviously, into Mitzrayim, but leaves with us coming out of Mitzrayim. But there's a larger picture to that, in which is that Bereishis is, as my cousin would suggest, is like master plan worthy. It's Avram's founding of monotheism. It's the Bris Ben Habisarim. This is what's going to happen. This is what Jewish history is going to look like. This is what it's going to be. The trials, the difficulties, the challenges, the opportunities, the Avos and the Yemos. You know, the comment of Masa Avos Simulabanim. Whatever happens to our forefathers is a blueprint for what will happen to the Jewish people. And that's Bereishis. Bereishis is the master plan. Shemos is the implementation of that plan. So with the Bris Ben Habisarim laid out a certain path, Shemos is that path, right? Shemos is the slavery. Shemos is the difficulties that come. It's the beginning of how we are this Goy Kadol. Avram is promised, you're going to be this great nation. Doesn't happen in Bereishis. We end up in Mitzrayim with 70 people, but we're not in a big nation. Yet we leave with a big nation. Ma'amad Har Sinai, the giving of the Torah, is the shift from this large picture to the implementation of the promises and the history of the Jewish people. So that as we begin Sefer Shemos, that's something that we should look at as we read these parshios. What is happening in these parshios so we can say, hey, that was referenced in Bereishis. That's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said this. Hashem says you're going to be a great nation. Hashem says you're going to be, in a strange land. This is when it's happening. So that's something that as you, whether you're at home, whether you're in shul, wherever it is that you're reading the parsha, we should think, how does Shemos fit into the larger lessons that we learned in Sefer Bereishis? So as we usually do, we'll read, you know, just an overview of the parsha, and then we will shift back to one story in particular. Again, the beginning of Sefer Shemos, Parsha Shemos, is the plan put in place by Paro. Something in the past that we've mentioned, that Paro cannot just all of a sudden come to his people and say, you know what, guys, we got to get rid of the Jews. It wouldn't work. The Jews were a vital part of society in Mitzrayim. They couldn't just get rid of them. So Paro's plan, his master plan actually, is that he has to do two things. He has to convince the people, the Egyptian people, that the Jews are nothing. And he has to convince the Jews that they're nothing in their own eyes. And that's why he does that with propaganda. You know, there's so much in the beginning of this week's Parsha that lends itself to studying of history. How do great evildoers in history, how have they been able to, you know, marshal such animosity and hatred and destruction of the Jews? They followed Paro's plan. Paro has massive propaganda. Paru vayishritzu vayirbu vayatsu v'omaod and pasuk Zion. They're so big. They're multiplying. It's propaganda. Oh my gosh, they're going to kill us. That's what he's telling his people. So immediately what Paro puts into plan is not an announcement, kill the Jews. Does it slowly. He taxes them, says you're just your visitors. He puts them in their own towns. He makes them feel like they are their own, he makes them feel like they are nothing, and allows the Egyptians to look at the Jews as they're different. They're eating by themselves. They're living, but they're not Egyptian. They're not our brothers. They're not our sisters. And that is Paro's master plan. He does not hire anybody just to let's go kill the Jews. It wouldn't work. Right? Hitler writes only one time in Mein Kampf to wipe out the Jewish people. It's a propaganda. It's Nuremberg laws. You know, I just shared the other week at Mincha Mariv about the European Union ban on shechita. The European Union has banned, they upheld a Dutch court that said shechita was inhumane and you first have to stun the animal before you are allowed to do shechita. And this was an issue in the Nuremberg laws. And the Nuremberg laws, one of the laws they came out with, in fact, it's been a law that was introduced as a bill in America in the 1950s by Senator Humphrey, that you have to stun animals. It's been tried to pass in Illinois. But in the Nuremberg laws, one of the laws was that you had to stun animals. And there was a massive debate among the rabbis in the early 1930s, what to do. What should we do? If you stun an animal and then you shecht it, it doesn't work. It's not kosher. So on the one hand, Rabbi Hillel Yaakov Weinberg, who was known as the Sri D'Esh, the great Rav of Warsaw, survives the Holocaust and ends up in Switzerland. He writes a massive tshuva in which he, brings in a number of sources and which he paskins. He was a great posek that would be okay halachically to eat the meat. Because number one, we need protein. Who knows how long this could last for? We need to eat. We need food. And if not, maybe we're not going to be, there's all our dietary restrictions might be forgotten about. So he's willing to be lenient. Other poskim said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We can't do it no matter what. And then you had a large group of rabbis, including Rav Chaim Moser Grzinski, including the Brisker Rav, including Rav Menachem Zemba, and from all the different, from Hasidish to Litvish, that actually said, we agree with you, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, you're right. Halachically, it would be okay. But we can't give in. Because if we give in, we're going to show the Nazis that they're right. That we're displaying that our way is inhumane, that it's terrible, and we can't give in. And this shifted the landscape of Shilas and Shuvos in the Holocaust. You can't just look at a tshuva and say, well, that was the answer given 10, 20, 50, 100,000 years, whatever it was years ago. You have to know the history. This was a major shift in which poskim were willing to say, even though it's halachically okay, if we pask in this way, it shows them that they're right. And we don't want to give in. We have a tshuva of Rabbi Yeshua Lev Aronson. Shulam Aronson wrote a whole series of Shilas and Tshuvos in the Holocaust. And one of his most fascinating, terrible, gruesome Tshuvos is about a death march in which the Shila of cannibalism came up. And while he is willing to say it would be okay to stay alive, he says, if we give in now on a death march when we can smell, the end of the war, it will show them that they won and we can't give in. So this is what Paro is trying to do. Paro made his own Nuremberg laws, his own way of putting the Jews in a way that they viewed themselves as garbage, in which the Egyptians viewed the Jews as garbage. There is a study done by the University of Virginia. You can look it up. It's called Blueberries, Accordions, and Auschwitz. And it's the picture of that this article studies is the image of the SS soldiers on their day off from Auschwitz, a mile out of town, having a great day, enjoying themselves, just having fun as if they were on spring break. And the whole article studies the propaganda that these kids, they were in their 20s. They grew up since the Nuremberg laws, thinking that Jews are garbage, thinking that Jews are nothing. So this is the plan of Paro. I think we've discussed this in years past, so we're going to move on. That brings us to Perek. Obviously, the Paro then decrees, all right, it's not working, and any kolabin hayilod hayarot hashlichu v'cholabasech hayun, we got to, kill the boys, but we can leave alive the girls. Perek Beis is the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Of course, we have Shifra and Pua, right? Shifra and Pua, Moshe is born. And we know that Kitov, the room is lit up, and this is Moshe Rabbeinu's Moshe Rabbeinu's birth. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu now is growing up in the house of Paro, not the easiest place to grow up for a Jewish child. And the pasuk tells us Vayahi b'amim ahem pasuk Yod Aleph in Perek Beis v'yigdal Moshe v'yitzel lechav v'yar b'sivlo sam. He can't turn away from seeing the plight of his brothers. Rashi says, Nasan Eina Belibi Lios Meitzar Aleim. For Moshe, this is who he is. Moshe Rabbeinu, He sees the plight of his brothers. He cannot turn away, which we're going to see in a little bit when we get back to the burning bush. Moshe Rabbeinu, he sees, this is why he's the redeemer of the Jewish people eventually. And then the Pasuk tells us something fascinating. The Pasuk tells us, in Pasuk Yud Beis Vayifen Kovacho, and he goes down, what does he see? He sees an Ish Mitzri, Maki Ish Ivri, an Egyptian strikes a Jew. Vayifen Kovacho Vayar Ki Ein Ish. You see, looks this way, looks that way, there's nobody. Vayaches HaMitzri Vayitzminehu Bacho. And he kills the Mitzri. So what does it mean? Now, either it means he looked around. Nobody's here. No one's going to tell on me. No one's going to tattle. I'm not going to get in trouble. He sees Ki Ein Ish. Nobody is going to come from this Egyptian that's going to convert. I can kill him. I'll tell you an amazing, amazing Kutzker. Listen to this. Says the Kutzker Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu lives in Egypt, an Egyptian life. He is an Ish Mitz. He is the Ish Mitzri. Okay, when he goes to Yisro for the first time, they say this is the Ish Mitzri. They say this is the Ish Mitzri that saved us. For all these guys know, Moshe was an Egyptian, right? He sees this Egyptian hitting a Jew. How do they know Moshe is a Jew? Nobody knew Moshe was a Jew. It's like Esther. Nobody knew. He didn't walk around with a sign. Nobody knew who was Moshe Rabbeinu. He wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu then. He was Moses. For all these two guys, Moshe was an Egyptian. He spoke, he acted, he talked like an Ish Mitzri. Chazal hold him to account that he let people refer to him as an Ish Mitzri without protesting and saying that, you know, okay, Yosef acknowledged he was a Jew. Moshe doesn't. So says the Kutzker Rebbe. Moshe goes out for a walk. He goes out for a walk. He's dressed like an Egyptian, like last week's parsha, like the Malbim says, that Yosef brings in Ephraim and Menashe dressed like an Egyptian, like Egyptian garb. And in a short time, he's letting people refer to him as a Mitzri. He has what we'll call an identity crisis. So he goes out and he sees a Jew getting beaten by a Mitzri. Well, which one is he? Who's Moshe? Is Moshe the Mitzri or is Moshe the Jew? Which one? Who does he identify as? Who does he identify as? Well, I grew up as an Ish Mitzri. My mother raised me as an Ish Mitzri. I went to school in the Egyptian public school. And yet, I see Ish Ivri Me'echav, the Pasuk says. This is my brother. So the Kutzker says, Vayiven Ko Vacho. What does he do? He looks. Who am I? Am I going to stand up for my brothers? I don't know. Am I going to join the Mitzri and beat the Ivri and beat the Jew? But I know that I can't be both. Because to be both, to be a Mitzri and an Ivri, is to be nobody at all. That is not an identity. That is a nobody. So he looks, Vayifen Ko Vacho, says the Kutzker. And he says, this is amazing, Vayar Ki Ein Ish. He says, I can't live like this. I can't live like this anymore. I'm either in Mitzri or I'm in Ivri. And what does he do? He sees Vayach es HaMitzri. Who's the Mitzri? Who does he hit? It's his own Mitzri identity. That's who he kills. That's who he takes out. That's what he says, I'm done with. And he buries him. Vayitzmeneu b'chol. Not the physical body, but his spiritual, you know, enemy. His other identity that he doesn't want to live with anymore, the Mitzri within him. And he buries it, and he's done. After this, Moshe's done, and he leaves. And he sees, you know, he goes out, they say, hey, we saw you, and that's it. Moshe Rabbeinu has now become Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is a Kutzker. It's an amazing, amazing Kutzker Rebbe. That Moshe Rabbeinu looks at himself and says, who am I? So much of who we are, we can't be everything. We can't be every identity. We have to find an identity. Moshe Rabbeinu grows up as an Egyptian. He's called a Mitzri. They identify him as a Mitzri. At this point, Moshe says, you know, shine, enough is enough. And he buries the Mitzri that was inside of him, and that transforms him into being Moshe Rabbeinu. Psukim continue, of course, that Moshe flees, and then he ends up saving the daughters of Midian. The daughters of Midian are at the well. They're getting bullied, and Moshe Rabbeinu saves them. Here comes the wells. We always see wells. Wells are where we are. Wells are the water cooler. I don't know if there's a Zoom water cooler, but a water cooler in the office where it's where you find out who people are. That's where we find Yaakov loves Rachel because he moves the rock at the well. Eliezer knows Rivka is the right wife for Yitzchak because of the chesed she does at the well. And here we see Moshe Rabbeinu saving the daughters of Midian again at the well. Perek Gimel continues that Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to come back to this in a little bit, about Moshe's meaning of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Eventually, after Moshe agrees, after the long conversation, a long, long back and forth as to who should be the, you know, should Moshe be the Redeemer, Moshe says, okay, Hashem says, go to Paro and ask him for a three-day journey. You should know, Moshe Rabbeinu, even though we sing it, right? Moshe Rabbeinu never says, let my people go. And Paro doesn't say, no, no, no. I mean, even though it's a song. Okay? Moshe is asked for 3 days. Why 3 days? Why 3 days? So either Moshe, it was deceit. That's what the Rashbam says. Maybe it was just deceit, right? Like, you know, we'll get out of here. The problem is, Jews are not very good at secrets. You know, I mean, as Moshe Weinberger once said, Jews tell secrets just one Jew at a time. Okay? There's no way that 1.5 million people are going to keep a secret. We're really going to leave after a day and a half, after 3 days. Not only that, you've seen Jews. We don't move very fast. Well, we're going to like start running a sprint from Egypt to Israel. We're not going to last very long. We can barely make it, you know, after lunch to the couch before we take a nap. Now we're going in the desert. Can't be. So some suggest that Paro's concern was actually, I don't want you to leave at all because I'm nervous that you're going to leave and after a few days find another nation to come back and to wipe me out. That's Paro's major, major fear. It's why he's always trying to limit who can go, who can leave, you know, how much they can take with them. He doesn't want to arm them with too much or they'll have the ability to join with somebody else and come back. And another idea, although it doesn't answer all the textual questions, is that the Rabbeinu Bachya says that the Jews just need time. The Jews need time. The same way that in a few parshios we're going to learn that when the Jews are ready to leave, they still need the time of Sfiras HaOmer. They still need 49 days to learn, as the Rabbi Soloveitchik says, time and time awareness and, being sensitive. They're slaves. They don't know anything about time. They need 3 days. They need a little time to get acclimated, the consistency of Judaism. Okay, we know that the parsha continues, that takes us this whole back and forth between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know the story of, on the way, Moshe and Tzipporah and Hashem almost killing Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Perek Dalin, but they eventually give the bris milah to their son Gershom. And then we have the end in which Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paro, finally says what he has to say, and Paro says, no. Not just no, but I'm going to make it worse. And how do we know that Paro thinks he's successful? Because when Moshe leaves, they say to Moshe, new Moshe, what did you get for us? Big meeting. This was it. Are we leaving? And Moshe says, no, you're not leaving it, making it worse. And they say to Moshe, hey, vashtem es reichenu, get out of here. You made it worse on us. We have nothing left anymore. Right? And that sort of ends Shemos, which leads us to next week with obviously the beginning of the Makos. So I would like to go back this evening to Perek Gimel. I would like to focus because I think it is an essential story to Shemos, to Moshe Rabbeinu, but really to the Jewish people and their identity. And that is the burning bush. The burning bush. Right, let's look a little bit at what happens in this parak. So parak Gimel starts with the following. Moshe was a ro'eh, right? He was a shepherd. It's one of the qualities of great leaders. He vayinagas atzon acharam in bar vayovol har elokim choreva. Comes to the mountain. Vayera malach Hashem elah belabas esh mitoch hasneh. And he sees, Moshe Rabbeinu sees, there's fire from, where is the fire? Mitoch hasneh. Very important to understand these psukim. It's within the bush. You know, as great as the graphics were from the Ten Commandments, the bush is burning. Okay. Vayar vihine hasne bo'er bo'esh vasne inenu ukol. And he sees that it's not being consumed. So, Vayomer Moshe, Asuruna ve'ereh. I have to look. I got to check this out, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is walking. Moshe Rabbeinu is walking. And he sees like a really cool thing. So he goes, I can't just bug. Today, you know what we would do? If we were somewhere and we saw a really cool thing, you know what we would do? We would take a lot of pictures. So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have a phone. He probably wasn't upgraded yet. He like had the iPhone 5. I mean, what was he going to do with that? He's probably full of data. He had no room. There was no iCloud. So whatever he had, he couldn't take a picture. So he says, how could I pass this by? I got to go look. And he asks, Madua lo yivar hasne? What's happening? It doesn't make sense. There's a fire. It's not burning the bush. Vayar Hashem kisar liros. And Hashem, I've learned this parasha hundreds of times. I've never thought about these psukim as I began to prepare for tonight. It's a strange dialogue. Number one, why does Hashem reveal himself with a fire? Why within a bush? Why does Moshe ask a question like, what's happening? And Hashem doesn't really answer, but Hashem, it's like going, and Moshe says, I have to see the fire. And then Hashem saw that he had to see the fire, so he calls out to Hashem, to Moshe, mitoch hasnat, vayomer Moshe, Moshe, vayomer hinei. There's a lot of questions. Why a fire? Why the bush? Why is this so descriptive? And Moshe says, I have to look. And Hashem said, Kisaler os, that since you turned to look, I will now reveal myself to you. What's happening within these psukim? What's happening within these psukim? So one suggestion in the Medrash is that the Medrash says it's because Moshe Rabbeinu thinks to himself, the Egyptians are gonna, Moshe left years ago. They're gonna destroy the Jews. So Hashem says, you see this fire? There's a fire. You're right. There's a fire. Right now the fire is the Egyptians. But it's not gonna wipe them out. Your question is, why is it burning? It's burning because I know what's bothering you, Moshe. What's bothering you is this fire, they're being consumed in Egypt. They won't destroy the people of Israel. You know, and I thought about this idea. And I thought about the Medrash that tells us that Avram Avinu has the same revelation. The Medrash is very clear that Moshe Rabbeinu is walking and he sees a burning palace, that the palace is in flames. It's not destroyed, it's in flames. And Moshe says, what's happening? Avram says, no, how could this be? Who's the Balabira? Who's the head of this palace? And Hashem comes out and says, Ani Balabira. And the way Rabbi Sacks is such a novel interpretation of this Medrash. The way Rabbi Sacks reads this Medrash in his book, A Letter in the Scroll, Rabbi Sacks says, there's a number of ways to view the world. If I view the world as evil existing, there should just be flames. There's just bad in the world. If I view the world that everything is great, everything's perfect, then there's no fire. It's just a palace. Avram sees both a palace and the flames, meaning there could be a perfect world, but there could still be fire. And Hashem comes out to Avram to say, that's the right question. The right question is asking those questions, understanding that bad is going to happen in the world, but it won't totally consume. And I believe that is such a clear parallel to Moshe Rabbeinu's seeing of this burning bush. And Hashem saying to him, it is burning. It's absolutely burning, but it won't ever wipe them out. And I think it's more than that. When Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Medrash tells us, Moshe's worried, how is this going to work? Right? Like how ultimately are we going to survive? And Moshe's concerned that Egypt will eat them alive, but not just Egypt. It's the fire of Jewish history, right? The fire of Jewish history is what's bothering Moshe Rabbeinu. How in the world are we going to stay forever? Whether that's the Crusades, the Inquisition, fires of exile, terror, pogroms, Inquisitions, Holocaust, Intifadas. And Hashem says, no matter how bad it looks, that's your question. Vahasne einenu ukol. It won't, no matter what. In the beginning of our history, Hashem is reminding Moshe Rabbeinu, it won't ever be wiped out. And you know, later in the parsha, we learn that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe have this back and forth, right? Hashem says, Moshe, you got to take out the Jews. And Moshe says, listen, I don't want to. They're not going to listen. I have a lisp. I'm not a good orator. They're not going to believe me. Back and forth a whole week long. They go round one, round two. Finally, the pasuk tells us that you said, you go, don't worry. Moshe says, just send who you're going to send. And most interpret that to mean, just send Aaron. He's going to do them anyway. He's got the orator skills. He's a good leader. Just send Aaron. And I remember, I found the Medrash a number of years ago, but I was in YU, so there was like an RCA Yom Iyun. There was a whole day of learning. How is that YU for the RCA? I was not in the RCA yet. I think it was my second year in YU. But Rabbi Schachter, Rabbi J.J. Schachter, was giving a shiur for, you know, RCA alumni. I was definitely not an RCA, like whatever the way, you know. I definitely should not have been allowed in. But I said I wanted to go to Rabbi Schachter. My chavrusa wanted to go to Rabbi Schachter. So we figured, who's going to kick us out of a shiur? So we sneak in to hear Rabbi Schachter. And Rabbi Schachter quoted this great Medrash Pirkei to Rabbi Eliezer. And I remember, I mean, this Medrash I heard from him, it's got to be, I don't know, 18 years ago. And I remember him in his great mannerisms and in his great skill, I was inspired. The Medrash says that Moshe is saying, don't send Aaron, send Eliyahu HaNavi. Ah, send Eliyahu HaNavi. So the next pasuk tells us, "Vayichar af Hashem," that Hashem gets angry. Why is Hashem getting angry? Why is this? What do you mean, Eliyahu HaNavi? Because Moshe Rabbeinu isn't saying, "I don't know. I'm busy. I got stuff to do." Moshe is saying, "I don't want to take them out. Not because I don't want to. Not because I don't have the skills. But if I take them out, it's Jewish history. It's Meraglim. It's Korach." It's back and forth. It's the stories in you know, the bad in Shoftim, and then the, you know, the trials in Malachim, and the separation of the kingdoms, and the destruction of the first base of Mikdash, and the second base of Mikdash, and all the terrible things, and Golos Babel, and Golos and Persia, and Haman, and Hitler, and I don't want it. Send Eliyahu HaNavi instead of me. He's the you know, the Mevaser Geula. He'll come. Done. Eliyahu HaNavi HaTishbi, we'll be done. We'll go to Israel. It'll be over. What a geula. We don't have to deal with all of Jewish history. This is Moshe's concern. At the bush, Moshe is concerned. Not with right now, why is the fire not, you know, what's the bush? But how will we last throughout all of exile? Right? The same thing that bothered Mark Twain about the Jews. That we saw them all, we beat them all. Moshe says, how is it going to work? Send Eliyahu. You send Eliyahu, done. We'll go to Israel. And that's why Hashem gets angry, because that's not how Geula works. Geula does not work by a one and done buzzer beater. We're in Israel. Geula works with ups and downs, with three steps forwards and four steps backwards, with trials, with opportunities. It's all of it. You're the person right now. It's not Eliyahu's time. When Eliyahu comes, it will be Eliyahu's time. So the first way to look at the story of the burning bush is that Moshe Rabbeinu says, how are we going to survive Egypt? But how are we going to survive Jewish history? And Kadosh Baruch Hu promises him, no matter what, now there's another idea to this story. And that is, the Medrash says that it's Kadosh Baruch Hu himself saying that I am with you. Imo Anochi Bitsara. This thorn bush is not a reference to Israel and all the issues that are engulfing them and hurting them and burning them. And the fire is an Egyptian cruelty, but the fire is actually the Shekhinah itself. The fire is actually the Shekhinah itself, in which it's saying, God appears to Moshe out of the midst of a burning bush to show that I am with them. Imo Anochi Bitsara. That if Israel is suffering under the, you know, the Egyptian, taskmasters, then I, so to speak, God, am suffering with them as well. This, why do we need to know this? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe, as we redeem the Jewish people, I want you to know, I will be with them Shchinta Begaliusa, we called it. In exile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu suffers. It's difficult. No, we say that on Tisha B'Av that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like in chains, so to speak. He wants to do something, but he's, so to speak, he's chained up. He can't. But he's in pain, and he hurts with us, and he cries with us, and he's there. It's not redemption time, because we have to earn it. We have to get there. We have to show that we're ready. But it doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is off somewhere else, that he feels our pain. He's here with us. It's something we reference in Bishalach, that when the Jews sing Az Yashir, that's what they're celebrating. They're singing a new song that they realize that God was with them the whole time, not just with the Makos and Dam Sferdeya, but throughout the entire exile. And that is approach number two to the burning bush. Well, let me share with you what the Nesivos Shalom suggests. The great Slonim Rebbe has a magnificent, magnificent idea. And he says, let's ask actually an earlier question, right? The earlier question we have to ask, you know, is we know that the Jews got to the 49th level of Tumah. Why didn't they go any lower? And why didn't they go any lower? And what he suggests is that the Jewish people, amazing idea, Moshe comes to God and he says to God, here's what my issue is. You have to think as a parshan, learning this story, you have to say, what is bothering Moshe and how does God answer Moshe? That is, as a learner, you should take the Chumash and ask all these questions, right? Like if you're in the classroom, you can quote a pasuk and then say, you know, I do this when I learn Gemara. I learn a Mishnah with my students and I'll say, I want you to ask me whatever questions you can think of. We need to think of 20 questions. That's what Gemara does. Gemara asks all the questions on the Mishnah. What can you think of? When you're learning Parsha, even if you might have learned it as a kid with Rashi's interpretation, what's bothering the Rishonim? What's Moshe's issue, and how does God answer that issue? So what's bothering Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Nesivos Shalom, is there was left within the Jews what the Nesivos Shalom calls a kustya tichiyusa, a kernel of vitality, which he says is emuna. As long as there is emuna in the Jewish people, they could survive. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Vehem lo ya'aminu li." Not like, they're going to say, Moshe, we don't believe you. Like, you know, we don't know. We don't believe you. Like when someone says, you won the lottery, I don't believe you. Means they didn't, Moshe says, they don't have that emuna. What evidence is there to suggest that they have this level of emuna? Right? What is there that we could say, you know what? I think there's something left there. That's what's bothering Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says back to him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says back to him, Ra'o Ra'isi. Ra'o Ra'isi, which is a double language. Hashem says to Moshe, as the Midrash says, I can see better than you. You see external, because you're human. As much as you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you're only Moshe Rabbeinu. You can see the external. But I can see the internal. I can see what's beneath them. I can see what's deep down inside of them. And what's deep down inside of the Jewish people is this kernel of emuna, this faith, this unbelievable potential to succeed. And because I see them there, that's why we're going to celebrate them. And he says this kustya dechiyusa is hanesheres tamid eitzel Yehudi. It is with every single Jew. It's with every single Jew. That's the bush. The bush is saying there is this fire that burns within the Jewish people. Now, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I'll share with you here. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in talking about in the Haggadah, right, when we say, Avadim Hayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, we were Avadim Hayinu, not Avadim L'Paro. Hayinu ben Mitzrayim. Well, you would say, who cares? It's the same thing. Either Avadim Hayinu or Avadim LeParo Hayinu. Who cares? So he says, we were slaves to Paro, but not Paro's slaves. The former would be only a juridic social description. We belong to Paro legally, but spiritually, we were free people. But when we become Paro's slave, then it's over. In Egypt, we might have been a slave to Paro, and we worked for him, and we maybe didn't keep any mitzvah. It was hard. A few things we kept, but we were slaves. But in our neshamas and deep down, this is not a philosophical. This is rooted in the Torah. That level of Amunah stayed with them. Moshe Rabbeinu questions it. He says, is it there? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look at the bush. Look at the bush. The fire is there. The fire is there. The bush was burning, but the fire was inside me. Toch Hasneh. And that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers Moshe's concern. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers Moshe's concern. There was this fire. You know, there's a shiloh brought to the, I believe it's called in the shiloh Chuvos Mima Amakim, is, you know, that after Ephraim Ashri, that someone says during davening, they were davening one morning, should they say the bracha shalom asani eved? Right? So it didn't mean it in a nasty way. He didn't mean it. Lamaisa, we're slaves right now. Should we say shalom asani eved? And the answer is that even a kidnapped person says shalom asani eved. Because while you might be a kidnapped person, your emuna, your neshama, can never be taken. And that kernel, that kusta dechiyusa, that existed in the Jewish people, is the fire. Not the fire of exile, not how bad galus is, not persecution, not pogroms, but the fire of the Jew. And as only when they got to the 49th level, the only thing that saved them was this kusta dechiyusa. And he quotes Moshe of Gurbin, who says that as long as the Jews kept this up, they couldn't be denied. The worst thing in life that we could ever think, is that we're good. This is it. I've accepted where I am, and I have no effort to change it. You know, I mentioned the other week that I spoke in the academy about apathy. That's what Moshe Gurbin is suggesting. Right, Moshe Gurbin is saying that if you believe that you're done, that you have no spark left, it's over. As long as the Jews felt there was a spark. Now, it's fascinating. If you look at the psukim, he goes on to say, what triggered this response? Right? What triggers the response that Hashem now reveals himself? So the psukim say, at the end of Perek Beis, Vayishma Elokim es na'akasam. Hashem hears na'akasam. It's not a tefillah. There wasn't a Tehillim gathering. There wasn't a, everybody stay home and work. We're going to gather. We're going to have a whole Tehillim, a learning session. We're going to write a tefillah. It was not a custom. It's a groan. They didn't even say anything. They just groaned. By Iskar Elokim es briso. That sometimes what we have to do is we have to be able to just cry, to just daven, and to take that first step. And what's fascinating in the psukim, if you go back and you say, okay, so Moshe, so now we know, okay? We know the questions. Why the fire? Why in the bush? So either it is to represent Hashem, imo anochi betzara, Hashem is with us in our pain, in our tragedies, in our sadness. Kadosh Baruch Hu sits alongside with us. He davens with us. He cries with us. He mourns with us. That's one explanation. Or the explanation is, Moshe says, how are the Jews going to survive? Look at them. Egypt is so powerful. And Hashem says, yeah. And at times in history, the fire is so all-consuming and hot and never-ending. Don't worry, says Hashem. No matter what generation, no matter what enemy, no matter what mask it looks like, no matter what it looks like, a crusader, or it looks like, you know, it looks like a pogrom, it looks like a blood libel, it looks like a terrorist attack. It looks like anti-Semitism. I'm promising you, it will never, ever be destroyed. Or this approach that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do they have? How could we do this? And Hashem says, because there's still a fire inside the Jews. That kusta dechiyusa, that level of emunah that they have, is so powerful. It is ever-changing. And that's, if you low back to the Pesukim, the Pasuk tells us, Pasuk Beis tells us Moshe sees this fire. The Torah could have just left it. And the Torah adds, by Yomer Moshe, why do we have all this back and forth? And Moshe, and the Torah tells us, and Moshe said, let me go see this fire. And then Hashem says, the fact that I saw that you saw this, why do we need all these words? Says the great Rav Avram Shor. Avraham Ashur writes the following. He says, because sometimes all we have to do is just Vayar Hashem Kisar Liros. We mentioned in our tshuva talks way back at a few months ago. Sometimes when it comes to tshuva, you just need to make a turn. Just a little turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? The way to do tshuva is just to turn a little bit, and that could be all we need to make that first step. The first step that Moshe makes is Vayar Hashem Kisar Liros. He just says, I have to look. And Hashem says, the fact that I saw that you're looking, that's all that I need. That's all that I need. Rav Avraham Shor suggests, it's an amazing, amazing idea, that Moshe merits divine revelation from God simply, or maybe not simply, because he took initiative to actively turn Vayar, Vayomer Moshe Asuru Na Ve'ereh. I have to see what's going on. Hashem says, because you did that, I am now going to reveal myself to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayar, Vayar Hashem Kisar Leros, in the same pasuk, Vayikra Elav Elokim Mitochasneh, Vayar Moshe, Moshe Vayomer Hini. And Rav Avraham Shor says, we apply this principle to our lives. Sometimes we have to make that turn. You know, so often we say, we wait for God to make that revelation. God, I'm waiting for it. When I see that turn, I'm going to make it towards you. But sometimes we have to take the initiative. And maybe only because Moshe takes the initiative does the Kadosh Baruch Hu respond in kind. You know, we can't pass up times that we see Hashem, wherever it may be, and whatever it is personal. You see Hashem in a certain way, in a certain light, in a certain message, in a certain circumstance. It is our job to respond in kind and say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, I see you. What are you trying to tell me? Maybe then Hashem will help us, will assist us, will speak more to us. But we can't let those moments pass us by. And that's why this story is so crucial to the foundation of the Jewish people. Number one is a reminder, no matter what we will face in history, no matter how bad it looks, no matter what the circumstance appears to be, and all we have to do is look back to Jewish history to say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is absolutely true. With times that we thought we were down and out, we were counted out, we've come back stronger, we've rebuilt. 75 years later, yeshivos and kolalim and Hasidic dynasties and explosion of Torah learning. It is a reminder that as bad as things could be, we have to realize, and it's comforting in a way, of course, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. It doesn't mean that Hashem won't bring sadness into our lives. That's part of our existence. But it means that when we're in pain, imo anokhi b'tzara HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels our pain. He feels our simcha and he feels our pain. The fire is burning. Hashem is saying, I feel that I'm in the middle of it. And it's a reminder to the Jewish people that as bad as it may seem, as long as we keep up our kusta d'chiyusa, that little kernel of emunah, of vitality, of faith, of care, of simply just believing, then vasna einenu ukol, then nothing will be ever done. But we have to make that, we have to look for those moments. Vayar, we have to say, wait a second, why is this happening? Just like Avram stops and says, why, Balabiro, what's happening? What's going on? Why is this palace in flames? Moshe Rabbeinu stops and he says, what's happening? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because you asked that, now I'm going to reveal myself to you. And it's a message for Jewish history. It's a message for us as Jewish people. It's a message for us as individual Jews, never to feel that our plot and our space in our religious lives is ever finished. Moshe Rabbeinu is 80 years old. And he says, all right, next chapter. Should never feel that we're done. If we ever feel that we're done and we've achieved our spiritual success, we're finished. We're good. We can plateau. We don't have that kusa d'chiyusa anymore. We have to always keep striving for a little bit more. Sure, everybody, a wonderful.